And so, today is a special day. Not only is it Pancake Day, which is always special, but it's also the Sunday before Valentine's Day. And you know, we Americans really go in for Valentine's Day. I read a research article this week that said, a survey actually, that over $18 billion will be spent this year on Valentine's Day. That is inconceivable, isn't it? It's a lot of money. And I know you can't, I want you, those of you who can't see this, don't run and make an eye doctor appointment, okay? It looked fine at home. It doesn't project so well here. But this just is just the breakdown that the top three types of gifts that are going to be purchased are candy, flowers, and jewelry. And they make up a big percentage of the gifts that will be bought. But I also read in Microsoft's Bing that last year, in 2016, close to 20% of consumers purchased Valentine gifts for their pets, totaling, believe it or not, $681 million. Unbelievable. Well, despite all these outer trappings and money spent on Valentine's Day, in some ways it can be considered a spiritual holiday. And not because it's named after a saint, but because it's a day in our lives designed to express love to a special person, or I guess I would have to say pet, in our lives. And while it's a good thing to focus on love, our traditions on Valentine's Day are usually in the context of specific relationships. And as wonderful as it can be to have that someone special in our lives, the problem with limiting love to specific human connections is that, in the words of Unity Minister Doug Bodaroff, relationships often fall apart. Has anyone found that to be the case once in a while? Okay. And as is in this case, I'll love you forever and ever until something better comes along or until I get bored. Also, you know, in our human skins, we do put conditions on love sometimes, don't we? You know that I'll love you forever if syndrome. I'll love you forever if you bring me my morning coffee. I'll love you forever if you love me back. If you stop working so much, or if you start dressing better. We have a whole litany of those. Worse still, though, according to Doug Bodaroff, is that syndrome that says, without you, I am nothing. When we look to someone else to make us happy and complete, we are seeing ourselves as less than whole. And we are imposing impossible expectations on those we love. Just think about it. Despite these differences between human love and divine love, however, Charles Fillmore says, all love is divine in origin. All love is divine in origin. And from 1 John chapter 4, we read a familiar passage. Beloved, let us love one another, because love is from God. Everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, for God is love. Since God has loved us so much, we ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God's love is perfected in us. And so we know, and we say a lot in Unity, that God is love, pure and unconditional. And created in God's image and likeness, we too are love. We don't have to find another human, an animal, or a situation to complete us. We're whole and complete, and we are on this earth to be the love we were created to be. In the book, New Thought for a New Millennium, 12 Powers for the 21st Century, Jim Rosmerge cites a well-known study, I know a lot of you have heard about this, by Dr. John Bowley. I think this was repeated many times, but this is the first one. And Dr. Bowley observed infants and toddlers living in orphanages who were seriously developmentally delayed, either physically or mentally or both. And because of staff workload, there was just no time for human contact. This is several years ago. Even though the children were provided with all their bodily needs, food and, you know, diapers changed and all of that were taken care of, Dr. Bowley concluded that the children failed to develop normally because they were not being cuddled and loved. And as a result of this study, the orphanages throughout the world changed practices, and the children did fare better. However, Reverend Rosemergy had an interesting reaction to this. He writes that something about this widely accepted conclusion that children must have love in order to develop normally, something about it seemed amiss to him. He says, a new insight of the third millennium is that our greatest need is not to be loved, but our greatest need is to love. To love. According to him, the children in the orphanages were denied love, but even more critical was the fact that they were denied the opportunity to express love. Their bodies may have been small, but they were spiritual beings whose very nature was being denied. Their isolation did not allow them chances to be loving, and that is what stunted their growth. As infants, he says, we are little bundles of love. Life is a joy and a wonder when we allow love to escape from us. We need to love. We're pre-programmed to need to love. And love's expression calls forth our own growth and development. Now, if you're skeptical about that, let's just think for a moment of a child's favorite teddy bear or stuffed animal. Maybe it's one from your own childhood. Maybe it's one from your grandchildren or children. I brought a friend with me today. In fact, I went home to get her because I left her at home the first time. This is Bunny. Okay? Bunny was our granddaughter's favorite toy. I mean, she carried Bunny around all the time. She played with her all day, held her in her arms, and she would not sleep at night without her. What a joy and comfort children get from their beloved stuffed animals or little cloth animals. And the truth is, excuse me, cover your ears, Bunny. I can't have Bunny hear this. Okay, but the truth is, okay, I think we've got her. The truth is, cloth animals, stuffed animals, teddy bears, contain no love. They're made of cloth, okay? Where does all that love come from? It comes from the children. It comes from within the children. And so it is with us. Okay, Bonnie, you can open your ears now. We're good. Okay. Rosemergy writes, the most respected people on earth are those who know love is the answer, but they have ceased looking for it outside themselves. They found love within. Being truly alive means being loving, and that is the message of the children from the orphanage. And we know that love is more than an emotion. Love is a spiritual power, an aspect of the divine within, one of our 12 inherent gifts from God. Love is the power that enables us to know our oneness with God and all humankind, that binds the whole human family together and acts as a mighty magnet for our good. Charles Fillmore said, our power of love is the pure essence of being. Of all the attributes of God, love undoubtedly is the most beautiful. Divine love is not personal, it loves for the sake of loving, no conditions. Like the sun, that its joy is the shining forth of its nature. And we know that the disciple who represents love is John. John was absolutely one of the disciples who showed the greatest love for Jesus. And he was the first to recognize Jesus as the Christ. Remember that point where Jesus asks his disciples the compelling question, who do you say I am? And John was the one who quickly replied, you are the Christ. And the body location for love is, not surprisingly, at the back of the heart. Just as the heart, always pumping, nourishes the rest of our body, love nourishes our souls. Last week, we talked about, if you were here, we talked about the power of wisdom represented by James, and James is the brother of John. Wisdom is the power that gives us spiritual intuition and helps us judge rightly. And these two brothers show us that love and wisdom, the two powers, need to work together in order for us to divinely manifest our ideas. In your God-given potential, Houseman writes, love without wisdom has a tendency to be blind, easily misled, foolish in its actions, On the other hand, wisdom without love may be harsh and cold, unfeeling in its activity. So when we open ourselves up to this spiritual power of love, it becomes a magnetizing force that attracts us to our good. We attract ourselves to whatever it is we love. And that is why it's so important to balance. Whoops, I got off, sorry. Let's go back once. That is why it's so important to balance love and wisdom, the two balance together. Have you known individuals, about this attraction thing, have you known individuals who in the name of love attract themselves to people and situations who are not for their highest good? Anybody ever hear of that? Yes, some of us might have fallen into that trap ourselves. I had a really good friend and colleague named Brenda a few years ago who sacrificed years of her life by putting her husband through medical school, even though obviously he wasn't much devoted to her or the relationship. And she kept saying, when he finishes his internship, when he does this, when he does that. But the day he opened his first practice, sadly, her husband left her for a young nurse. So she had a lot of love for him, but it wasn't really meshed with wisdom. And it's important, we have to know that love without wisdom can sometimes be blind. And Jesus is very clear about the commandment of love. All three of the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, highlight an incident when the Pharisees had gathered to challenge Jesus. From Matthew 22, 34 to 40, we read, "Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together, and one of them, an expert in law, tested Jesus with this question, 'Teacher, what is the greatest commandment?'" And now we have to remember that in addition to the Ten Commandments given to Moses on Mount Sinai, Jewish law of the day required believers to follow 613 additional commandments every single day. Unbelievable. So surely this lawyer thought this question would make Jesus hesitate and falter for a response. Which one would he choose among all of the 600? But Jesus answers immediately, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And a second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." And by the law and the prophets, Jesus is referring back to the Hebrew Bible. In Luke's version, it actually ends with, "There is no greater commandment than these." So Jesus is saying, above all, love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Love yourself, and love your neighbor as yourself. Friend and enemy, all of humankind, is who he means when he uses the word neighbor. Bible scholar Ed Townley gives us some historical perspective on this. He writes, "Jesus takes the opportunity provided by the Pharisaic lawyer's question to simplify centuries of religious writing and intricate legalities into two simple sentences." I mean, Jesus boils it down. And the Pharisees of Jesus' time were known for their insistence on obedience to the finest details of the law, all 600 plus of them. And this is the important thing. Townley says, they excluded from their concept of Judaism anyone who could not measure up. And let's think about for a moment who could not measure up. None of the common people could measure up. None of the fishermen, none of the farmers, none of the villagers, because they simply did not have the time or means to follow all of those many commandments. And Townley helps us to unpack this metaphysically also. He says, the Lord of the New Testament is the Christ, the divine essence that is the true identity of everyone. Jesus is saying that the most important commandment is to keep our focus on our own intrinsic oneness with the divine source of all life and energy. When our heart, soul, and mind are truly centered in the Christ, every choice we make becomes a creative act, bringing more of that life and energy into expression. And the second commandment is like it. It requires us to recognize that same Christ energy in everyone we meet, not excluding people like the Pharisees did, but honoring everyone's innate divinity and creative power as fully as we honor our own. So God is the energy of love, and we and all of our fellow humans and God are not separate entities. We are all one. If we simply focus our God-given energy of love and just allow it to flow forth, we will express love in all things. In loving ourselves, we are expressing God. In loving others, we are expressing God. Not just those we like, not just those who like or love us, but everyone. It's not really necessary or even appropriate for us to like everything everyone does, and I might add, it's also not possible, probably. And certainly, we do not have to endure any abuse ever. Loving ourselves, we set the boundaries. But regardless of appearance, we must love the Christ or God in all persons and things, even if we choose to release them from our lives. And so divine love has nothing to do with how many gifts we get or receive. It's not about that at all. It's about how we see one another. How we see one another. Divine love is recognize the Christ, the presence of God in ourselves and one another, even when it's hard to see. And here's the question. If we are unable to love ourselves, to see ourselves as perfect ideas in the mind of God, how can we possibly behold love and the Christ in others? I think we probably cannot. We are here on this earth to express all our divine attributes, love, faith, strength, peace, and harmony. And the greatest of these is love. Our mission is to express the love we are. And this means, perhaps, we extend beyond the boundaries of what we thought was ourselves. We push ourselves farther than we imagined ourselves to be. And only when we stay centered in our own spiritual power of a limitless love can we see the divine essence in all others. Paul writes in Colossians, "Above all, clothe yourself in love, which binds all together in perfect harmony." And Winifred Houseman wrote in the book, God-Given Potential, when we let love take over our lives and transform us from within, the magnetic love of power, the power of love, is stronger than any force in the universe. The power and the love. We began to see things in a new light. As people in love can discover new beauty and new greatness in each other, we, through the attracting, energizing spirit of love, awaken and begin to see ourselves, others, and our new world in a new light. And so, inspired by that vision, that sense of godness, we are aroused to greater spiritual activity. We come to know more, to feel more, and to enter more fully into our spiritual adventure of loving and living. This is the power of love. Happy Valentine's Day to you all. So let's take a moment now to declare that source of omnipresence as we affirm oneness with all that is good. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.